Still broadcasting from the Civic Cypher Studios, this is the QR Code where we share perspective, seek understanding, and shape outcomes. I go by the name Ramses Ja.
And they call me Q Ward.
And we want you to keep hanging out with us because we got some more to talk about. Of course, as I mentioned before, we're going to talk about dealing with folks, at least some of the ways that we found dealing with folks that hold the opposing political position. I know that's a tough one, but, you know, we're still working through it, but we maybe have something that might help. We're also going to ask the question, was Jackie Robinson a DEI hire? You know, I know how crazy that sounds, but I think it's worth sticking around for. I think that if you don't have a proper framework for what DEI is, I think it could certainly help. And if you do, I think it could help as well. Q had something that he really wanted to share today, and I'm really excited to listen to it. In fact, let's get to it right now. We are going to listen to Q Ward's clapback as he shares with us his thoughts on the Republican attacks on education, science, and facts.
So it's an interesting time right now, man. This, I never imagined at any point growing up, I never imagined at any point as an adult, and definitely never imagined when I was so excited about becoming a father that myself or my children would have to grow up in this version of America. And as we see bans on books and the mocking of science, the contrarian position that has become popular on almost every topic, especially things rooted in fact and science and research, that there's like a smugness to being the person that questions everything, provides no answers, provides no resources, provides no actual alternative information, just brings everything up for question in a way that makes you seem like the smartest person in the room. So they're now trying to point, they're simultaneously looking down their nose, but calling the educated the elite so that the larger population can consider themselves somehow the underdog or the victim of those who are educated. So we're now in a position where being educated doesn't make you an elitist, but loudly resenting it might. Right? So sometimes knowing things is now being framed as bad. Like somehow it's become suspicious to be an expert about something. You know, having a degree makes you an elitist, and thinking critically, well, you know, that makes you un-American somehow. There's a very, very loud movement, Rams, that we have to deal with that's trying to convince people that education is the enemy. That curiosity is dangerous, that expertise is oppression. But how do we get here? So this isn't new. The far right's war on education has been decades in the making. It started on talk radio, grew on cable news, mostly Fox, and metastasized through social media and what Ramses and I always call out echo chambers, pushing the ideas that, you know, college professors are brainwashing people, that public schools are indoctrinating kids. And then if you're a person with a degree, especially if you're Black, liberal, you know, queer or female, that you're destroying America, and, you know, affirmative action is the only reason you had access to education anyway. So our president said on camera and somehow did not offend anyone that he loves the poorly educated. I think some people thought he was joking, but he was dead serious. That wasn't a punchline. That was a message, because the less you know, the easier you are to manipulate and control.
That's what I took from it.
So don't say it's about arrogance. You know, people that are educated are arrogant, but that's not what it's about. They're mad, not because education creates arrogance, but because it creates autonomy and independence. It causes people to ask questions and challenge narratives and resist manipulation. And they don't want that. They don't hate knowledge because it makes people smug. They hate it because it makes people harder to manage. And for what? Like, who benefits from this, Rams? Like, to what end from the fear, from the confusion, from a population thinking that education is the biggest threat. So who wants to weaponize it actually? Well, mostly elitist. They'll say, I don't need some liberal professor teaching me how to live or telling me what to do. But are they really mad at what they're pretending to consider elites? Because they're not mad at billionaires. They vote for billionaires. They cheer for them. They want to be them. Mm. They wear their names on red hats and gold sneakers. Oh, man. Their problem isn't with the wealthy. And it's not actually with the educated. They're not actually rejecting or resenting curiosity and education. They are pushing anti-intellectualism very intentionally. They went to Yale, Rams. They went to Harvard. They went to the Ivy League.
Oh, yeah.
So how come they're trying to convince everyone else that higher education is bad?
Bad, yeah.
They don't actually resent intelligence, Ramses. They just know that they can exploit other people's resentment of it.
Yeah.
Because they know when you start asking questions, you demand answers. When you understand history, you're far less likely to repeat it. When you know how the systems work, you stop settling for the scraps that they give you. You stop looking to your left and your right for an enemy, and you look across at those who oppress you and realize that you've been under their thumb the whole time. So Ramses and I will not apologize for being educated. We won't pretend that that ignorance deserves equal footing with truth because it hurts your feelings. The moment we do that, we hand over the future of ourselves, our country, and our children to the people who never feared knowledge for themselves. They just never wanted to unlock it for you.
That's about as potent as I've heard. You know, and I recognize that I'm very fortunate that I got to go to school a bunch of times and get a bunch of degrees. And you're absolutely right. Not just what you learn, but the people that you learn and the ideas that they share, it helps you become a more powerful human being and a more powerful citizen. And as a result, you're less likely to just, as you mentioned, deal with the scraps that they're giving you. You demand that your elected officials do what they are elected to do. And that has got to be tough, especially for folks on the right trying to make such huge shifts in the country right now. So moving on, and speaking of folks on the right, talking to folks with, you know, opposing political opinion, someone with a different political opinion than you, you know, politics and religion. I mean, there's like a handful of things where you could have a conversation with a person that you've known for years, have that one conversation, and then you're never friends again, right? Politics and religion definitely are two of them, right? And for a lot of people, it might not come up. They don't want to bring it up because they don't want to run that risk. But for some people, it's inevitable, especially nowadays. More and more people find themselves having to confront the reality of their situation. Listen, my belief is that your vote for Kamala Harris is going to ruin the country. And then the opposing side is my reality is made worse by your vote for Donald Trump. It emboldens not just Trump and Republicans, but it emboldens the people on the ground who vote for him. Once he's in office, they feel way more up and they show their guns off and they think this is their country and they, you know, and it makes my reality a lot more scarier, right? So for some folks who live in those realities, they have to now talk about politics, right? And that can be a very challenging thing for folks to do. And I'm going to try to go into this as unbiased as possible. And Q, I'm going to ask you to remain true to Q because you're going to keep us on our line. But for me, I have made a commitment to at least one person I won't share his name, but eventually he's going to be on the show. He's been on our shows plenty of times. But I don't like to talk about him if he's not here and he hasn't been on the show yet. So, but he's a dear friend of mine, and he thinks he's a conservative, white presenting Jewish man. He works in the same space as me. He is a person that I would consider an intellectual. He is well researched. He stands on business, right? And I think that everything that he says is wrong. And I can demonstrate to him every single time that everything that he says is absolutely wrong. I have no problem doing it. I'll do it again. And I'm going to love him through it all, right? The reason I made this commitment to him is because he, like I, provide insight into what it is that people over there think, which is something we need to know about. And I provide him insight into the reality of the situation. You know what I mean? And we're appreciative of that. You know, whenever he comes into town, you know, we grab a meal, we sit down, and we argue for a couple of hours. At the end of the night, we give each other a hug. He goes back where he's going. I'm go back to where I'm going. You know, a few times throughout the year, if we're not, you know, on a show together, we're checking up on each other's kids, each other's moms, that sort of stuff, right? Or his mom. I check up on her. And, you know, I see him doing his journalistic work from time to time. He'll pop up on Fox News or pop up somewhere, you know. I'm like, okay, good for him. And, of course, he sees me. I go viral or something like that. You know, that's just how it goes. But no matter what, I've committed to seeing the world, using his lens to peek into his world from time to time. Now, when it comes to talking to him, one of the things that I've done is I've established that no matter what this man says out of his mouth, that I'm going to acknowledge his humanity. I'm going to give what he says the benefit of the doubt. And that's very, very difficult for me to do, right? Q, you keep the line, but I'm sharing this story the way that it happens. So he says some crazy stuff, and I unfortunately have to dignify it. I have to meet him where he is. And that's a very taxing exercise, but I found, believe it or not, that I actually learned some stuff from him. I don't learn anything about my material reality, but I learned something about how he thinks the world works. And that fear shapes the world that I live in. So understanding that fear, and in order to understand it, I have to dignify it. I have to acknowledge it. But understanding it helps me become a better journalist and share things that I feel will help dismantle the things that have caused him to be afraid, okay? Something that I know to be true is that a lot of people will pick white, presenting, Christian, heterosexual, male Republicans for this example. Because not just because they're, you know, talked about quite a bit, but because, you know, I think they fit the mold here. Some of these folks will say, I'm not a racist. I'm absolutely not a racist person. I just don't care about your people's problems enough to not care about my own. In other words, I'm not racist, but I'm going through some stuff. And if this dude that I'm voting for says he's going to help me with my stuff, I'm hurting. So I'm going to vote for him. I know it's going to make it harder on y'all, but it might make it easier on me. And I hope that it doesn't make it harder on y'all. That's not why I'm doing it. But I'm trying to let some air out of the ball over here, right? That doesn't make me racist. That means that I'm just overlooking racism, right? Now, of course, they wouldn't admit that last part, but that's effectually what they're trying to say. And that's how they circumvent the conversation about race, right? So let's say, for instance, I accept that. I accept it. Okay, you're not a racist person. You are simply trying to figure out how this administration is going to benefit you and your material reality over this other administration. I now have to have a different conversation. It's not a conversation about race. Even if that person does harbor some racist thoughts, they have changed the state of play. So I now have to play their game. And learning how to play that game without introducing race is a strategy that I had to become very good at. And that is one way that I've learned to talk with someone with a different political opinion. What is it that's making you do this thing? And how do you think it will benefit you? And then I, knowing how to do the research that I know how to do, again, journalistically credible research, this is what we always say, and this is what we do every day, know how to get the things and present them if they're willing to listen. Some folks aren't, to be fair. And, you know, if they're your friends and you've made a permanent decision, then you have to deal with that. But if they're willing to listen, baby steps, maybe one, two articles a week, you let them know, hey, what you're imagining might end up being true, but it might not end up being true. And if it doesn't end up being true, not only did you not get what you wanted, but you've made my material reality worse. And it's more likely that you're getting duped into voting for something that is not in your best interest, that will also negatively affect me and my family and my capacity to raise my children. And it makes everyone worse off. So I've said enough, Q. I know you want to jump in here. So any thoughts so far?
It's hard for me because I think it's a false premise to begin with. This conversation is not about people disagreeing on politics. And it's intentionally framed that way to make the person who's most affected by it emotionally seem ridiculous and charged up. And it's a gaslight. Mm-hmm. The question has nothing to do with us agreeing or disagreeing on politics. In most cases, this question is posed when people disagree on humanity, on empathy, on compassion. And unlike my brother Ramses, I have made no such commitment to honor or dignify people who sit across from me and share those types of opinions.
Right.
So if the preservation of you and your house is worth the demise of everyone else, you and I are not the same.
Yeah.
I do not reserve a space for you because my reality is shaken to its core, mine, not the people I see on TV, me. And I have sleepless nights and uncomfortable drives to work and have to worry about my children and my family in a way that I've never had to before. So I have no interest in your differing political opinions right now, because you knew when you cast that vote that it wasn't just about politics. And I don't want to hear that it's not about race, because when has it ever not been about race?
Mm.
So your skin color is not political. Mine is. So they play both games. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not a political person, or I should be able to disagree with you politically and still be your friend. I have no interest in playing either of those twisted semantic games. It is very, very clear that a line has been drawn. And if we stand on opposite sides of it, so be it.
Well, again, I appreciate us both being able to tackle that. And as I mentioned, I needed you to hold that line because that needs to be said. I think that needs to be said the loudest and at the end. But clock works the way the clock works. It's time to move on. For entertainment, we're going to be talking about Jackie Robinson. And was Jackie Robinson a DEI hire? And that's kind of the question that kind of prompted this segment, our thoughts on this segment. So if you're like me, not a sports person, I'm not a sports person, but I know who Jackie Robinson is. But let's say you don't know who Jackie Robinson is. I'm going to share a bit just to bring you up to speed. So this, and just so you know, this came about because I was talking to Q. And this is like a sports person fact. A person that knows a lot about sports would know this fact. In the MLB or Major League Baseball, all of the teams, any team you go to, you can't wear number 42. And that's because Jackie Robinson wore number 42 when he played baseball. And the whole league retired that jersey number in honor of him, right? And that's such a profound thing. Like, normally your team will hang your jersey, but the whole league. So when Q mentioned that to me, then this question came up, was he a DEI hire? And then we got to, you know, talking about it, and we thought it would make great radio. So I'll share a bit for those that don't know. Jackie, this is from JackieRobinsonMuseum.com. Jackie Robinson was born on January 31st, 1919 in Cairo, Georgia, the son of a sharecropper and the grandson of former slaves. Young Jackie grew up in Pasadena, California, raised by a single working mother of five. After graduating from Pasadena Junior College, Jackie attended the University of California at Los Angeles. A star athlete, Jackie became the university's first four-sport letter winner, excelling in football, basketball, track and field, and baseball. After leaving UCLA, he served in the U.S. Army during World War II, but was court-martialed and honorably discharged for standing up for his rights and refusing to move to the back of a segregated military bus. I didn't know that. That's dope. Upon returning home from the military, Jackie Robinson set his sights on joining baseball's Negro Leagues and began playing shortstop for the Kansas City Monarchs in 1945. Later that year, opportunity beckoned when Branch Rickey, the general manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers, invited Robinson to become the first African-American to play for the all-white Dodgers farm team, the Montreal Royals. Anticipating the great adversity that Robinson would face as he integrated modern baseball, Rickey professed he needed a player who could bear the torment, famously telling Robinson he was looking for a ball player with guts enough not to fight back. On April 15th, 1947, Jackie Robinson stepped onto Ebbets Field for his first game with the Brooklyn Dodgers. It was the beginning of an unparalleled career in baseball. At the end of his explosive 10 years as a Dodger, his record included a .311 batting average, 137 home runs, 734 runs batted in, and 197 stolen bases. In 1955, he helped the Dodgers beat the New York Yankees to win their first World Series championship. Robinson took home the Rookie of the Year award in 1947, the MVP award in 1949, and in 1962 became the first African-American inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Okay, so that's who Jackie Robinson is. Q, was Jackie Robinson a DEI hire?
So I'll take a couple of steps back first.
Okay.
For the baseball fans listening, you heard that. So Jackie Robinson batted .311. That's how .311 is read in batting average.
Okay. Sorry about that.
I had to school my brother on his sports take.
Okay. I'm getting there.
So something keeps happening. And I'd never seen it happen before about 10 years ago. And now it happens all the time. And we just keep letting it happen, which is really, really, really disturbing. Once upon a time, one of my good friends, his son was going to college. And as he was getting ready to go to college, I was telling him a story about, you know, my experiences, you know, leaving the city, going to college and dealing with racism for the first time and having a classmate where I was the first black person he'd ever met. And all the different struggles that come with leaving home, leaving the watch of your parents and, you know, going out into the world to claim your autonomy and to experience life. And when you come from a city like mine, Detroit, Michigan, where most of your life you're surrounded by blackness, stepping out in the world into the world can be a much different experience than you expect. Mm-hmm. And his response was, don't even worry about it, Q. He woke. And that was the highest compliment he could pay his son.
Nice.
And everyone that would have heard it would have understood that. Don't even worry about it, bro. He woke. He's enlightened.
I like that.
He's informed. He's plugged in.
He's not asleep.
Or unplugged, however you want to use that. Like Ramses said, he's not asleep. He's aware, bro. He knows what's going on. And the right took that word and made it a contextless pejorative where they use it just as an insult, having no idea its roots or what it's supposed to mean. And what we did is we let them get that off. So now when they call someone a woke liberal, that woke liberal pushes back like they've been insulted or like they've been called something bad. Like we let them hijack and reappropriate the word. The same thing we let them do with affirmative action. The same thing we let them do with critical race theory. And now, once again, we're letting them do to DEI. So someone, in an effort to insult Jackie Robinson, and they didn't say the words, but their actions showed it. removed him from, I think it was the United States Army's archives. And then, some right-wing extremists and just flat-out jerks accused him of being a DEI hire on television and in print. And we collectively got upset. No, he's not. And it's like, people, yes, he absolutely was. And that's the point.
Bingo.
One of the most qualified and talented athletes in the history of the world lived in a world that would have never even given him a chance because they determined before he showed up that he was underqualified because he was black. DEI gave him a chance, shout to Branch Rickey, and showed the world that y'all are tripping. Y'all might want to get a little piece of this black in y'all sports because they're brilliant and talented and beautiful and they make the game look like art. We once again have let them co-opt something, determine what it means. So now when we see an American flag wave, we think right wing MAGA racist instead of American. Or maybe that's what American is becoming. Maybe that's what that is becoming, but initially we just let them take it. We let them take the church. They're the party of God and guns. We let them get
Crazy.
both. We let them be both pro-life but anti-feeding children lunch at school. So in another instance, DEI is exactly what Jackie Robinson represented, an all-white league being integrated, some diversity, some inclusion, and eventually some equity, at least in that space. Because today, if you're as good as Jackie Robinson was back then, you might earn two, three, four, $500 million to play a game. And now, Afro-Cuban, Afro-Dominican, Afro-inspired Spanish-speaking people from all over the world dominate that game a lot more than the African Americans do. But we all come from the same source. And Jackie Robinson was the bridge and the gateway and the door for all of these people, for all of these ethnicities, all these backgrounds, all of these cultures to play a game that they love, a child's game for a king's ransom because of DEI. Let's not let them continue to co-op, rebrand, and reprogram us on everything that we know to be true. We got to do better than that. My opinion, and one that I picked up from somebody I admire greatly, the great Nick Wright, Jackie Robinson was absolutely a DEI hire.
Well, thank you for that take, Q. I want to let you know that I love you so much. I appreciate you, and thank you for being my brother and for teaching me and this walking this journey with me, man. You're very special to me, and you're a gift to me. So I want to make sure I said that.
Love you too, my brother. Thanks for allowing me to do so.
No, I know. We got a journey, man, but we on it. At least we ain't not alone. We got each other, all right? All right, well, that's it for us on the QR Code. Today's show was produced by Chris Thompson. If you have some thoughts you'd like to share, use the Red Microphone Talkback feature on the iHeartRadio app. While you're there, you can hit subscribe and download all of our episodes. Be sure to check us out on all social media at Civic Cypher. You can find me on all social media at Ramses Ja.
I am Q Ward on all social media as well.
And we want to say thank you for tuning in and continuing to tune in, and be sure to check us out next time as we share our news with our voice from our perspective right here on the QR Code.